All right, gentlemen, so for complicated organizational considerations, they decided the following. So we had done most of Tochen yesterday. It was a little bit left over. I think I want to push off the two big topics in Tochen till next week, those topics being the issues of electricity that are kind of an offshoot of Tochen, and Refuah, which is even bigger than that. So we'll do that next week. And today, maybe we'll do some of the other side topics, primarily Melechas Machshavas, which we should try to sum up. And maybe we'll talk also a little bit about Shtayim Sha'asau, which is a little bit of an involved topic, but just so we should know what the main issues were in terms of that signal. We'll see if we can cover those two today. So for most of Tochen, we'll push off next week. I just want to mention one point about it that I mentioned yesterday, that there is a little bit of a discussion about whether Tochen requires specifically a kli. It sounds like that from Rashi, and Shabbos and Kavkavchas and Aleph, and the Beis Yosef interprets Rashi that way, but the Beis Yosef assumes that without a kli, so there would be an issur d'rabbanan. And it's interesting. The Shvisas HaShabbos brings them a focus about this. And as the Svarim discuss, it would seem to be that why shouldn't we say that if there's no Kli, it should still be an Isser Daraisa, it should still be a Tolda. So, for example, when it comes to Kotzer, so we saw that Kotzer normally has a Kli, that's the Av of Kotzer. But if you do Kotzer Biyad, so then that's a Tolda. So why should we say that if it requires a Kli and you don't have one, gets knocked down to a Drabbanan, let's say it gets knocked down to a Daraisa, it should be knocked down to a Tolga, which isn't much of a knockdown, it's essentially the same halachic ramifications. So here, as the Sefer Taldesha points out, but this is just an issue that we see coming up again and again, that it doesn't seem that we can assume that malachos follow a consistent formula, that you can assume that all malachos should necessarily just plug into an algorithm and be treated the same way. That apparently Chazal had an understanding in terms of how they should be applied, in terms of when a shinoi will make something into a drabana, when a shinoi will make something mutter, when it will go from an av to a tolda, and that we need the mesorah of Chazal to understand exactly in each malacha how it plays out. In some cases it will have to do with how it was done in the Mishkan, in some cases it will be a little bit more subtle. But essentially, it just brings home again that point that we've seen in a couple of contexts, that it's not so easy to assume that, okay, so here's, in terms of Malacha A, X plus Y equals Z, so in terms of Malacha B, that's also true. It seems that each one has its own internal rules, and therefore, as we've seen, a Shinoi will impact different Malachas differently. What's considered an Av, what's considered a Tolga, all of that will play out differently, and in many malachas you'll have a structure like this where even if it's done in Mishkan with a kli, without a kli it'll still be an av. So it's hard to know in any absolute sense, and just that's brought out by this point as well. Okay, so let's try to talk a little bit about malachas machshavas, which
we said that if you don't have a kli for Tochen, it's a derabbanan.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, if you say like Rashi sounds like Tochen is requires a kli, and the Beis Yosef comments on that it could be a derabbanan without a kli. And it was a suffix in the Shvisas HaShabbos. So the question would seem to present itself that why shouldn't we say, look at something like Kotzer? And we should say it shouldn't make a difference, it's still being a Nisr D'Oraisa. So that's essentially that point.
So it just seems to talk about cleavers and no cleavers, like Borer.
No, not, yeah, yes and no, not just cleavers. And then there is some comparison to Borer that's being made, but that which we're using it for an excuse for is not just the kli versus non-kli thing, but beyond that, the fact that malachos don't necessarily transfer to each other, that the principle that you find in a malacha, it's not like you can say, oh, any malacha, if you do it with a kli, it's a daraisa, it's an av, and you do it without a kli, it's a tolda, and you do it with a shinoi, it's a drabanan. It's that Chazal have an understanding of how each malacha is primarily done, and what will be the consequences of shifting from that, and they're not necessarily consistent from one malacha to the next.
On this point, could we equally talk about this in Boger?
Correct. Yes. Right. You talk about it in any malacha, or in all the malachas that provoke this kind of question, which is many of them. Huh?
Whose point was that?
The Sefer Tal Dasha points this out, but it's not radically different from things that we've talked about in other contexts. Okay, so let's try to talk a little bit about Malachas Machshavas. It's a major topic, and certainly let's try to get at least that done today. That comes to Malachas Machshavas, so it's very difficult to pin down exactly what's going on. If we want to have some type of definition of Malachas Machshavas, so we have a...
Interesting. Oh, I have colors also.
Right. So I don't know, in terms of Chazara, we have less time to write on the board. But we'll see. I'll definitely reserve the right.
I'll leave them here.
Okay, thank you. Definitely will reserve the right to possibly use it. So, right. So when we spent several days on this topic, so we wrote a lot on the board. In the interest of time, we'll probably do that a little bit less. But essentially, the issue in trying to figure out Malachas Machshavas is that, wow, when it comes to Shabbos, so we have so little direction from the Torah Shabbat, from the Torah Shabbat, rather. The Torah Shabbat doesn't tell us so much about what's going on. And that's what the Gemara in Chagiga that we talked about in the first day, the Gemara comments about how amazing it is that Hilchos Shabbos is very sparsely discussed in the Torah itself, in terms of what a malacha is and the like. And it comes out from the Gemara over there in Daf Yod that one of the elements that really surprises us is that Malachas Machshavas is not told to us in the Torah in the context of Shabbos, that we know Malachas Machshavas because of the Mishkan. I think we chose Parshas Vayakov at the time originally to talk about this for that reason, that because of the Mishkan, so we know about Malachas Machshavas, and we know that the Mishkan teaches us about Shabbos, so therefore, oh, Shabbos has also got Malachas Machshavas, which is really a pella, right? Which is really amazing, because this is such a defining element that we expect a little bit more hadracha on it, but also in terms of once we know that it exists, we don't really know what it means. Right? We don't really know what Malachas Machshavas entails. And in order to try to figure out, as we spent some time on, so we could try to just gather together clues. But the problem with the clues is that a lot of them are in the Rishonim or even later, and we don't necessarily know that what one Rishon invokes as an example of Malachas Machshavas, we don't know that other Rishonim necessarily agree. And even the handful of cases that are talked about in the Gemara itself, it's also in the context of a machlokas. So it's hard to say coherently that, okay, all the clues we put together to try to figure it out, that we necessarily know that there's any one voice that would agree with all those clues. So whether or not they do form one theory is a challenge. So with that challenge in mind, we nonetheless try to discuss some of what is brought down in this context. And just mention on the offset, in terms of the importance of the various, in terms of the impact of Malachas Machshavas on the various malachas and the like, so when we talked about Zareya, we mentioned this, but it's worth mentioning again, because it especially illustrates some of these points, that there is a machlokas, perhaps, in terms of what impact Malachas Machshavas has on a malacha. So should we say that Malachas Machshavas defines the malacha? If you don't have Machshavas, you have nothing, and that's why you're pater? Or should we say that it's a condition in the malacha, that a malacha exists independently? You can have a malachas, and you can have Malachas Machshavas. It's just that Shabbos has a condition that it has to be Machshavas. So if you're missing Machshavas, you're missing a clause in the malacha, but malacha is still a malacha, you're just putter for it. So this happens to be in the Sefer Birkas Shimon, he suggested that this was a little bit, perhaps, dependent on the machlokas and the Gemara and Daf Mem Zayin, about whether the malachas are all derived completely from the Mishkan, or whether there is a source of the malachas outside of the Mishkan, and just the Mishkan tells us what the malachos are. Remember that machlokas from the beginning of the year. So he thought that was relevant a little bit to the question of are the malachas completely derived over from the Mishkan, or is it that we have a concept of malacha independently of the Mishkan, and just the Mishkan is now telling us what the specific ones are, which leaves room more for it to be a condition within a malacha. And Rabbi Nachum Zemba had a very fancy voice in suggesting this was a machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam. And in order to explain that machlokus, we have to first see how it plays out in terms of some of the examples. So I'll now talk about some of the examples where we see Malachas Machsheves, and then after listing those, we'll come back to Rabbi Nachum Zemba's voice in what he wanted to say in Rashi and the Rambam. So first of all, right off the bat, if you'd say, what does Malachas Machsheves mean? So you might say, okay, machshavas, it sounds like it means machshava, sounds like it means kavana, that if you don't have kavana, you are lacking in a malacha. So that could be, and there are some sources that indicate that way. So if you look at some of the examples, so among the examples that we have, davar sheino miskaven, right? Davar sheino miskaven is apparently an issue in kavana, if you don't intend to actually do the malacha itself. But the problem with using this as a clue is that even though Rishonim do invoke this in the context of Malachas Machsheves, Tosfos and Shabbos, for example, and Daf Mem Aleph, and Tosfos and Yuma and Daf Mem Dalet, it's a little bit of a problematic example because Tavar Sheinu Miskaven and Psik Reisha are not unique to Shabbos. This is an issue, this is a concept that applies B'chol Torah Kula. So it's hard to say that Malachas Machsheves is the defining issue here. Nonetheless, it may still be an example. It may be that Malachas Machsheves means that Shabbos is particularly affected by the issue of Davar Sheino Miskaven, even though it applies in other areas of Torah as well. And without going into details, we mentioned that Reb Chaim Brisker, we talked about this subject originally, Reb Chaim Brisker has a somewhat debated piece, and not everyone accepts what he has to say there, where he suggests that Davar Sheino Miskaven in Shabbos is just fundamentally different than Davar Sheino Miskaven in the rest of the Torah, because in Shabbos, it's a chisaron malachas machshavas, which has a different definition. So not everyone accepts this kind, but without going into the way he applies it, just the point is that it's possible to say at once that the gracia of davar sheino miskaven is a topic that applies to the whole Torah, and yet still argue that it's a malachas machshavas kind of idea. A second example, which also seems to relate to kavana, is Malacha Shantriach L'Gufa. So that's a little easier to say because that is unique to Shabbos. Right, we also mentioned, we talked about this topic, if you want to try to find clues, so how do you find clues? So either you find clues because Rishonim or the Gemara explicitly talks about Malachas Machsheves. If you don't have that, so you might try to look at something that's unique to Shabbos. You might say, okay, if Shabbos has a special rule, so that's why it must be because of Malachas Machsheves. But the truth is, it doesn't have to be. There are other reasons why Shabbos could be unique. So, for example, we mentioned that Shabbos seems to have more of a focus on the Maisa than other areas of the Torah. So, if Shabbos is unique in a certain context, it might not be because of Malachas Machsheves. It might be because the Maisa focus that we have on Shabbos. Or it might be because of the Mishkan in other applications. That yes, the Mishkan is the source for the Malachos, and the source for Malachas Machsheves, but it's the source for a lot of things. So it could be that if there is a Mishkan reason to say something, it doesn't necessarily mean that's about Malachas Machsheves. So we mentioned that as at least three different reasons why Shabbos might be unique. Malachas Machsheves, the Mishkan as a whole, or this Maisa focus. So therefore, to say that if something's unique to Shabbos, oh, boom, that means Malachas Machsheves, it's not necessarily the case. But in the case of Malachas Shemeshuch L'Gufa, it does sound credible. And indeed, that's what Tosfos and Shabbos and Ayin Hey and Aleph sounds like, that Malachas Shemeshuch L'Gufa is an issue of Malachas Machsheves. However, it's also not necessarily a slam dunk. And Tosfos and Yuma, and Daf Lamed Aleph and Aleph, sounds like it's simply an issue of Mishkan. And that also gets into the question of what Malachas Shemeshuch L'Gufa is. We talked about this in more length the first semester. But just for now, the fact that Tosfos maintains that Malachas Shemeshuch L'Gufa is a lack of Mishkanian symmetry, it's a lack of matching the model that was done in the Mishkan, and when it comes to the other Rishonim, we saw a different definition, that it's about Tosfos and Shabbos understands Tosfos in a few places, but Tosfos and Shabbos by Tzadi Beis had assumed that the issue was that it doesn't match what was done in the Mishkan. The Mishkan did it for a certain purpose, and we're doing it for a different purpose. And the majority of other Rishonim saw it differently. The majority of other Rishonim saw it as that you're doing something negative instead of something positive. You're chasing away a problem instead of doing something that you want to do constructively.
Not Machlokas Tosis and everybody else.
So that's a little bit relevant to what the Makar is, right? So if you believe the Makar is the Mishkan, so then you could more easily believe that that's what the defining element is that has to match the Mishkan. And if you believe that it's negative versus positive, that probably ties a little bit more into a Machshava-based definition. But again, so we have a lot of ambiguity there, but it could be that this is an example of Melechus Machshavas being a determining factor. The Gemara actually discusses it in another context. The Gemara Maseches Krisis and Daf Yates, it's also in Sanhedrin and Daf Samach Beis, so the Gemara invokes it in the context of Mesasek. Mesasek, as we mentioned, is basically your lowest level of activity. Then it's lower than Shogeg. So if you do something B'mezid, so then you're Chayev an Onesh. If you do something B'shogeg, you're Chayev a Korban as a Kapara. And Mesasek is even less than that. Mesasek, the Gemara says, Potsim and a Korban. We've given an example, assume this is probably a pretty reasonable example. Somebody goes into the room on Shabbos and decides he's going to turn on the light, so then he's amazed. If he walks into the room and he forgets that it's Shabbos, or less likely, he forgets that there's an issue of turning on lights on Shabbos, and he turns on the lights, and then that's what we call a shogeg. If he enters in the room and just out of his habit, he just goes like this, so then that's mesasek. That's the word kenos. He's just going about his day. He's not even thinking about what he's doing, and he just does it kind of on autopilot, so that's called mesasek. If he trips and falls on the light, that's nothing. That's not even mesasek. Right, so that's an accident. But Mesasek is like the lowest level of doing something without awareness and without focus. So that's a patur, also really b'chalotor kula in some context, but also in the context of Shabbos and the Gemara, at least according to one opinion, the Gemara does invoke Melechus Machshavas as a possibility. Question with
them? What would it be considered if you did something like half asleep? Like sometimes you might like go up to the bathroom, then you go back to sleep, then you find out, oh, I turned off the light in the bathroom, and
yeah,
I remember it.
I would think that's more mesasek, and it just happens to be your consciousness is at an even lower level, but it's you do something without paying attention at all to doing it, so then that's, I think it's mesasek. There is a little of a blurry line between some of these categories, but that seems to be the proper definition. So in that case, so this p'tur may be related to Melechus Machshavas. Rabbi Akiva Eger has a controversial tshuva in Simen Ches, where he writes that Mesasek is still considered to be a Maisa Aveira. It's just not subject to a korban. So it's a p'tur of a korban, but it doesn't mean that it's nothing. It's still considered to be a Maisa Aveira. For the most part, that's not going to have much of an afkamina, because most people aren't going to ask a shayla because they don't know that they're being mesasek in something. But there is a possible range of ramifications. For example, when we talked about psik reishis, we mentioned different working theories as to what the issue, why you putter for davar shenu miskadek. Right? Or why don't we say that that's considered to be a suffik isser or something like that. So one of the theories we mentioned is that it's basically comparable to mesasek. It's only happening because you're involved in something else, so therefore that's a very low level of intent. So it's different than the usual mesasek because it may be a low level of intent, but you know that it's happening, or you know that it might happen. So there you might be asking a shayla beforehand. So the fact that Rabbi Akiva Eger thought that was an isser is relevant. Now it's relevant, but it's difficult because we pass in that Davar Shenu Miskaven is still mutter if it's not psik reishis. So that was a problem somebody I found had to deal with. If you believe that Davar Shenu Miskaven is essentially mesasek, how do you deal with Akiva Eger's tshuva? Do you accept it or not? Not everyone could accept it. Okay, but in any event, mesasek is this another category where it does seem to be that machshava is at play here, that machshava is the issue, and that's why you have a p'tur. Also, the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Tzadi Zayin that there is a p'tur of lois aved machshavto, which, again, you need the Rishonim, like Tosus, to comment that this is a melechus machshavas issue. But what it means is that you try to do something, and what you're trying to do is a melacha. And what you actually do is also a melacha, but you fell short of what you're trying to do. So the Gemara gives an example. You want to throw something 8 amos, and instead you end up throwing you 4 amos. So you did a melacha knowingly, but it was different than the melacha you were trying to do. So there's also a p'tur. So that seems to be Malachas Makshavas once again, very possibly a play.
Where is it?
Where's the Gemara?
Yes.
Inside Zion in the base. So if these were the only examples that we have, so then, okay, you could believe that that's what Makshavas means. Makshavas means Machshava. It means intent. And that you need to have an even higher degree of purposefulness in Shabbos than you need in other areas. And if you're lacking that, then you're lacking something fundamental. However, there are other examples which make that harder to say. For example, of all those examples, is that we have a p'tur of Mekalkel, which the Gemara in Chagiga actually invokes in that same context that we mentioned before. So Mekalkel doesn't seem to be an issue of intent. And so if somebody's doing something destructive, we don't necessarily have to assume, unfortunately, that he doesn't have intent. Many people very deliberately do destructive things. So it happens to be that Kiryas Sefer suggests that that is an issue of Machshava, that if it's destructive, it must be you don't have full Machshava. As Rav Asher Weiss points out, and Rav Asher Weiss has a couple of places in his farm where he lists a lot of these examples, so he says that's very hard to say. You know, why should it be that just because it's destructive means you don't have Kavanah? We know that's very possible for that not to be the case. It was suggested, I remember Sammy suggested at the time, that you still could tie that to Machshava, because if you believe that the definition of a Malacha, like most of Rishonim, differently than Tosfos, that a Malacha by its nature has to be something constructive, has to be something positive, so then you could say that the Kavanah that you have from Mekalkel, which may be 100% devoted Kavanah, but nonetheless is at odds with the Kavanah of a Malacha. So it's not that you don't have Kavanah for what you're doing, it's that you don't have Kavanah for something that qualifies as a Malacha, so maybe you could make a case that it's a Kavanah issue, but it seems like it's really something else. It seems like this goes to defining Machshava differently, that Machshaves has the connotation of Machshava, but it also has the connotation of Chashivus, that the action should have significance, should have stature, and something that is destructive, so that's not necessarily going to make the grade in terms of what we look for in a Chashiva Malacha. Another possible example is what's known as Kla'achar Yad, and it's that Kla'achar Yad, the Beis Shmuel, and the Chalkas Mechokek, and Evan Ezer said was a p'tur of Malachas Machsheves, and that's a, we'll talk a little bit about the Gemara and Dalit that we talked about in this context, we'll mention that at the end, but that idea of Malachas Machsheves in this context may also depend on what kind of Kla'achar Yad you're talking about, that we've discussed in the past, that the Egle Tal has a Yisod there, that there are different types of Kla'achar Yad. There's a Kla'achar Yad in the result, and that's the P'tur B'chol Torah Kula. That's something that we find makes a difference in all areas, in many areas of Halacha. But when it comes to Shabbos, we also have a P'tur of Kla'achar Yad in the action itself, in the way you're doing it. So that maybe is more unique to Shabbos, so that could be another example of Malachas Machshavas. We also have a concept that we talked about yesterday when we talked about Soveya, of Malachas She'ainim Eskayamas. That emerges from the Mishnah and Shabbos and Kuvbeis in the Beis. In that context, we discussed yesterday a little bit that it could be that when it comes to Tzoveya, it has particular significance, but this is a principle in all of Shabbos, that if a Malacha is not going to last, so then that is not subject to, that's not subject to Chiyuv. And that, as some of the Rishonim understand again, is also an issue of Malachas Machshavas. Okay. Another major issue we spoke about at great length the first semester is the issue of Chatzi Shir. If the Malacha that you're doing is lacking in the full Shir, so there was a big debate among Rishonim what the status of that is. Rashi in Shabbos and the Fine Dalam and Aleph said it's the same thing as a Chatzi Shir of Treifus and the like, meaning that it is an Isser D'Oraisa, you're just Pater. Other Rishonim maybe said it was an Isser D'Rabbanan. We'll get into that a little bit more maybe in a few minutes, but the Rashbam, in his commentary to Baba Basra on Daf Nun Ches, so the Rashbam asserts that it is an issue of Malachas Machshavas, sorry, Daf Nun Hey, excuse me, it's an issue of, sorry?
I just changed it.
There you go, sorry, yes, Daf Nun Hey, excuse me, is a issue of Malachas Machshavas, that you apparently can't have Chashivas if you don't have a Shir, and that issue is going to impact on some other things. We'll come back and talk about that in a few minutes when we come back to it, which will be in a few minutes. Okay, so the Gemara also says in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Tzadi Gimel on the base that if somebody is going to carry something on Shabbos and what he's carrying is Pachos Mekashir, so he should be Pater, but it happens to be that he's carrying it in a kli, and the kli itself is bigger than a shear, so what he is carrying in totality is larger than a shear, so nonetheless he's still Pater, which is interesting. And it means that Malach Smachsheves, if that's really the factor, seems to direct us to what his real goal is, not just what he's doing, but also what he's most interested in. So he's interested in the item that's being protected by the Kli, therefore that's where we find the Shir. We also mentioned that Rav Huttner in his Mamarim in Shabbos, I believe in the first Maimer, in Pachir Yitzchak on Shabbos, focuses on this as representative of Shabbos's unique relationship to Emes, and how it's all about what's really true, and therefore we zero in on that which you are most interested in. Apparently, again, a reflection of Melachas Machshavas. Rabbeinu Chananu on Daf Ayin Dalet in Shabbos, Daf Ayin Dalet Mibbeis, has a comment which we saw in the context of where he had talked about it, which was Borer. When we talked about Borer, so we knew there was a heter of La'alter. And you're allowed to do borer when other conditions are in play, and also it is for immediate usage. And that heter of la'alter was a subject of some discussion of what that's about. So we saw that there are some rishonim who say that that's considered to be a shinoi, that's considered to be a non-derech breira. So that's why you're patur. But we also saw that there was a strong trend in rishonim to say that it's mutter because it's what we call derech achila, which is basically implying that, like the way the Ramban says it somewhat mysteriously, but was interpreted in later svarim, that if you are eating something right away, you're eating being borer la'alter, so he has a language like be'isra lo tachinin be'heter tachinin, meaning that he's not trying to do a malachi, he's trying to just lives his daily life, he's just doing derech achila, and the Rabbeinu Chananu expresses that as a lack of melachas machshavas, which sounds like he means that it's a lack of a significant chashuv action, it's something that you're doing for your stam eating purposes, not to be any type of a creative artist, and therefore we should potter it for that reason. And just to give two more examples, so the Ramban and the Ritva in the commentary to Gittin and Daf Yutes, so they assume that the psur of ksav al gabe ksav, if you write something on top of something else, so that really you should have been chayiv. It's actually an act of ksiva, but in Shabbos you're potter because that is considered to be a lack of melachas machshavas. Again, it sounds like the chashivas. And then in terms of so it should be, he said it should really have been a real ksiva. They're talking about in the context of Shabbos that it should have been the Ikar Adin, a real ksiva, and nonetheless the issue is that it's not Malachas Mach Shabbos.
So, if it's real ksiva, it should be good for a get.
Could be. But in terms of Shabbos, the issue is Malachas Mach Shabbos.
So the Yutes?
Yutes, yeah. So there's another idea that Chidushi Harim had in his Chuvas, that when it comes to Hotzah, he's trying to figure out why it is that adults let their kids carry stuff. It should be a problem of having your kid do a malacha. So he wanted to suggest that maybe the malacha of a katan is not considered to be malachas machshavas. It sounds like there he's talking specifically about hotzah, not about all the malachas. And in Rebina, he was quoted as saying this by all the malachas, that there is a lack of machshavas when it comes to the activity of a katan. So that gives us essentially 12 examples of Malachas Machshavas, and 4 of them are consistent with a Machshava idea, but the other 8 are really more consistent with a Chashivas idea. So it seems like it's some combination of both, that both ideas are relevant, and that it's also noted that Unklus, when he translates Malachas Machshavas, and Rashi Maseches Beitza has the same translation, that it's a malachas umnas, that it's an act of artisanship, an act of craftsmanship. That's where you have this concept specifically. And that may or may not help us to have one unified theory. Just to get to what we said that we get back to in terms of Reb Menachem Zemba. So it's interesting. So Reb Menachem Zemba discusses this question of whether Meleches Machsheves is a detail, is a condition, or whether it's the whole definition. And he wants to say that it's a machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam. And he gives two examples to illustrate this point. One example has to do with how we get toldos, or how we decide what's an av and what's a toldo. We talked about this at the beginning of the year, we talked about Zareya. So Zareya, so the Gemara has a list of other actions that are related to Zareya. And it's a whole debate in Rishonim, there are at least four different ways of seeing it, as to what is an av and what is a toldo in that list. So the Rambam holds they're all avos. All the actions that the Gemara lists are all avos. And Rashi holds that they're all avos except for one, zomer, pruning a tree, which helps it grow. So that's considered to be a tolda. So in explaining the difference, so Ibn Nachum Zemba says as follows. He says that Rashi thinks in order to be an av, you have to have the same purpose as the malacha, and you have to have a compatible action. So the other things the Gemara talks about, noteya, so you're planting a sprout into the ground, or you're grafting things onto the tree, or onto the, you're doing things that are at least comparable enough to Zareya, and they're in the interest of having things grow, so that's an av. But Zomer, it's also for the purpose of having things grow, but the action is opposite. The action is so fundamentally different. Instead of making things add, you're taking something away, so therefore it's going to be a tola. So in other words, according to him, according to Rashi, you have to have some level of comparison both in the function and in the form. While the Rambam apparently has a much more generous definition of an av, anything that very strongly correlates with the function of the av is considered to be the av, even if the action is different. So therefore, he suggests that when it comes to the Rambam, machshava is everything. Machshava alone can create an av malacha. If you share a machshava with an av, you are now doing an av, even if the action looks very different. While Rashi is not willing to say that, because Rashi requires that there be a certain comparison in the action also. Malacha is defined by itself in terms of its action. And the machshava is a condition. So you have to have both. You have to have the action of the malacha together with the machshava. So he suggests that you find this elsewhere as well. Because we talked a few minutes ago about Chatzi Shir, so there is a apparent machlokus between Rashi and Rambam on that point. Because Rashi, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, Rashi says in Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph that Chatzi Shir is also in the Torah when it comes to Shabbos. It's the same kind of Chatzi Shir we find in other areas of Halacha. So therefore, somebody who violates a malacha on a less than a shear, you carry something too small, you cook something too small, etc., etc., so you are in violation of an issur d'oraisa, so you're just patur from the onesh. So the problem is, many achronim didn't know that the Meiri discussed this before them, but the Meiri and many achronim discuss that on Daf Gimel, so Rashi sounds a little bit different, because Rashi talks about akira without hanacha, that if you're going to pick something up, or put something up without putting it down, so there it sounds like Rashi believes it's an issur d'rabbanan. That's not an issur d'oraisa. So many explain, the very likely chiluk here, that there's a difference between a chatzi shir, which is doing the avera but on a quantity that's too small, and a chatzi malacha, something which is not just you're working with too small of a quantity, but you're not fully doing the malacha itself. That's a much more flawed action. So Rashi would say that if you're doing the malacha, but you're not using enough material, so that's an issur d'oraisa. But if you're not even completing the action, so that's not even an issur d'oraisa. That's an issur d'rabbanan. That's a different type of situation.
What you said over the last time, you said like, Rashi hoped it's
Machshavas
focused, the Rambam
Malachas
focused.
Yes, that's what we haven't said the Rambam yet, so but you'll see that.
But I don't see how that ties into function and form.
So let me just finish the explanation. You'll see how it comes out. So the Rambam, the issue with the Rambam is that he lumps the two together. These two categories that Rashi presumably separates, a full malacha on less than a shir, that's chatzi shir asum in a Torah, and an incomplete malacha, that's asum midrabanan. The Rambam lists both those cases as asum midrabanan, the person who carries too little, or who carries something big, but does only akir or lehanacha or the like, or let's say carries two amas per shos haravin, so the Rambam puts that all in one bag. So why does he do so? So says Menachem Zemba, because he believes that machshava is everything. So if we are to assume that Rashi and the Rambam both agree with the Rashbam, that the Rashbam says that if you have less than a shir, we mentioned a few minutes ago, less than a shir, you're lacking in melechas machshavas. So if that's really the case, so let's take that as given. We could argue that this is not the common assumption, but let's assume here that it is, that everyone agrees that no shir, you have no machshavas. So what's the consequence of having no machshavas? So according to Rashi, it's still an issa deraisa, a yapater. In other words, the malacha has its independent existence. It just needs to be machshavas in order for you to be tired. But according to the Rambam, it gets knocked down to an issa derabanan because machshavas is fundamentally definitional when it comes to malacha. And if you don't have machshavas, you don't even have a malach at all. It's going to have to be characterized as a derabbanan. So the common point between those two explanations, and they're different, that's also what I want to draw out here, but to the extent that they overlap, is that what Menachem Zemba wanted to say, is that in both cases, the Rambam is expressing a view that machshava is everything. Therefore, machshava can create an av by itself. If you share a machshava with another av, you have an av. And if you don't have machshava, if it's less than a shir, it's an issa derabanan, because machshava makes or breaks the whole thing. You can create an av by machshava alone, and you can diffuse a malacha without machshava. While Rashi, in both cases, holds machshava is not so definitional. It's a condition. You need machshava to be chayav, but it's not the whole thing. So therefore, if you only have the machshava of a malacha, that's not going to create an av. Maybe it'll create a toldo, but it's not going to create the av. It has to have the maisa of the av. And when it comes to a malacha, that if a malacha is missing a shir, if it's chatzi shir, it's still also daraisa. You're not chayav for it because you don't have the condition of machshavas, but the malacha is still defined on its own. So that's how he wanted to sushtal the two. But what we wanted to note, based on that explanation, is you notice that he's really using two different definitions of machshavas. That in the case of the av, it's machshava in terms of intent. That your intent to do something similar to another av is what makes the av. In the case of chatzi shir, it's not about intent, it's about chashivas. So he is making this vort about machshavas with really two different approaches to what machshavas is. So are they all part of one big mega definition? I guess so, but it's just interesting that he's using these two examples for one vort, which really draw on two different definitions of what machshavas is. But also note that in this context, at the very beginning of the year, so we spoke about Tosfos and Gimel and Aleph, where Tosfos raises the question of why is it that the Mishnah tells us some of the shiurim, so to speak, that it says Hakosha Shnei Osios and Oreg Shnei Tfiris, etc., etc., that there are certain malachas which list the requirement of two minimum, while other shiurim are not mentioned in the Mishnah. So many Achronim thought that there's a difference between the shiurim the Mishnah doesn't talk about and the shiurim the Mishnah does talk about. That the shiurim that aren't mentioned in the Mishnah, those are shiurim that are just a condition for chiyuv. If you're missing them, so it's still a malacha, you're just patur from. But the shiurim the Mishnah does mention, these two minimums, is that if you don't have that shiur, the malacha is completely flawed. It's a chatzi malacha, it's not a complete malacha at all. And the Avnei Nezer expressed that difference by saying that if you're lacking a normal shir, that is a lacking malacha, that's lacking machshavas. While the examples mentioned in the Mishnah, if you're missing that condition, that's a lacking malachas.
Who is that from?
The Avnei Nezer. So in other words, just expresses that he's understanding that machshavas is a condition in lachas machshavas, the way Menachem Zemba understood Rashi. And there are situations where you could be lacking in malachas, and that's what the Mishnah is identifying. Okay. We just also mentioned in that context that you also may recall from the beginning of the year that there is a Gemara in Daf Beis in the Beis Amud Kadmon, which tries to figure out some machlokas in the Gemara over there. It's a question of the Girsa who the machlokas is between, but machlokas about how do we categorize watering the ground. Is watering the ground a tolda of Zareya, or is it a tolda of Choresh? And Tosfos suggests that the question is, do we look at the machshava or do we look at the maisa? But in terms of the action, so the action looks like it's more comparable to Choresh. You're doing something to the ground. But your motivation for doing it is so that the plants grow better, so it's machshava-wise, it's more connected to Zareya. So maybe the machlokus in the Gemara is trying to figure out what do we pay more attention to when we define malachas. So what's also important in this whole equation, yes, sir?
Just the general thing with Choresh, that in terms of the Avalach, how can you really make that argument in that case? Because just by the definition of how it works, no matter what your intention of, there's always no different Zareya.
Except less directly. It's one thing to say your intention is to do Zareya, right? You're plowing the ground so that you can later plant stuff. But it's going beyond that to say that your intention is to help the plants that are already there. Right, so if you plant the stuff and you want it to grow better, so you water the ground so it grows better, that's not for the purpose of Zareya, that is Zareya. You know, that is something you're doing as a part of Zareya, as opposed to setting the stage so that you can later do Zareya.
Right, but even in our Mishnah, they have, even though, for whatever, because the ground is harder to straw, the Choresh is after the Zareya, so even in our Mishnah case, you can say that.
Right, and I don't want to get too much into it because it's a little bit of a time issue. But you may recall that there was actually a whole discussion, so based on that Gemara, so we might call Harisha Shnia, if you do a Harisha after Zareya, so there was a whole discussion, is that a Malacha of Harish, or is it a Malacha of Zareya? Right, so it could be this Malacha of Zareya, so that was its own discussion, which is a little bit off topic for us now. So if you have a hard enough time making all those examples cohere into one definition, so it gets even worse when you consider the fact that there is a whole other category of Malachas Machshavas, where Malachas Machshavas exists as a chiyuv, where there are situations where you could have been potter, and yet Malachas Machshavas comes and makes you chayiv. So there are many examples in the Rishonim, but just in the interest of time and focus, we'll just mention two examples, one that's from the Gemara, and one that's from a Rishon, but the one that's mentioned most often as an example. So first from the Gemara, so the Gemara talks about Zora, so this overlaps with other things that we are chazaring at the same time, so that's an effective chazara, because this is relevant both to the Malacha of Zora and the Malacha of Tochein, and maybe every other Malacha. And that, the question is, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma and Daf Samach that it seems surprising that when it comes to Nezikin, we say that if you damage somebody with fire, and the wind does your work for you, so you could potentially be potter for that. But when it comes to Shabbos, we find that you are going to be chayiv for Zora v'ruach masayato, that if you throw stuff into the air, and the wind separates it for you, so that's a full-blown malacha. So that's you're chayiv for that. So the Gemara has a little bit back and forth trying to explain it, and ultimately concludes that Malachas Machshavas is the factor there. So this is very striking, because here Malachas Machshavas is serving as a reason for chiyuv. Well, until now we've talked about it as a reason for ptur. And that was a major, major, major machlokas, and we've shown him and in the poskim, and that's what we'll talk about next week when we talk about tochein electricity. Is the Gemara saying that that is an exception, that Zora is Malachas Machshavas because it was in the Mishkan, so it doesn't work, it doesn't follow the rules, but it's a Malach anyway? Or is it saying something more than that? Is it saying that in Shabbos in general, because of Malachas Machshavas, that if you have a plan that takes off, a plan that works, even though it's not a direct action, you're going to be chayiv for that? So that was a major debate, we'll get into that more next week. But that's an example of Malachas Machshavas as a chiyuv. And the Rishonim, the example that's quoted most often, is on Shabbos and Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph as a machlokas between the Ran and the Rashba concerning Chayk Tochas, that if you write something, but instead of writing it normally, you have a black splotch and you cut out the space to make it into a letter. So the Ran says that in the context of Shabbos, you'd be chayiv for that, because it's Malachas Mashabbos, that even though it's not considered ksiva in other areas of the Torah, but because you want it to be an act of ksiva, so your Malachas Mashabbos comes and is mechayiv you. So that throws an even bigger monkey wrench into this whole story. We also then mentioned, or thought was a particularly fascinating theory, which takes things in a little bit of a different direction. So the Kashub of Arav, in his Chuvis, he has a certain perspective on what Malachas Machshavas is. And we then noted that the Chalkas Yoav also seems to have this understanding. Both the Kashub of Arav and the Chalkas Yoav are both Talmidim of the Eglei Tal, both Talmidim of the Avinezer. So they have the following understanding, that the issue of Malachas Machshavas, as understood in the Mishkan and by extension in Shabbos, is one of Lishma. That the Mishkan, according to the Yerushalmi, and according to the Ran and Sukkah, had to be built Lishma. And if you're missing Malachas Machshavas, that's not called Lishma. It's an interesting sushdel. You could agree with it or not, but it perhaps opens up a whole different understanding, because when it comes to Lishma, so Lishma is a concept which is often confused with, is often overlapped, is often used interchangeably with Kavana, but many assert that they're not the same thing, that Kavana is knowledge when doing something, while Lishma is dedication of usually of an object to a certain purpose. So it could be that there's a lot of relevance here to Kavana types of things. It's an overlapping concept, but it's still slightly different, and that maybe Malachas Machshavas means that you need to do a Malacha essentially Lishma. You need to do a Malacha that is dedicated for a distinct purpose, and that reflects itself both in your involvement and your intent, and then also when it having all of the indications in the object that it's done with Chashivas, that it's done with full status and significance. Hi.
The Kuk Tokos works for a get, which needs to be Lishma. Why is it Malachas Machshavas?
So, that gets into, it's also a couple of premises are not so partial, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to.
I decided to say it.
Understood. So, in the interest of time, I'm not going to address that right now. But I do want to mention that we also saw this was a discussion in the Gemara in Shabbos. We talked about when we did our Haaros, that's also really something we have to chazer a little bit. We talked about the Haaros on Ayin Gimel Tayin Hey. So you may recall on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, so the Gemara has a very surprising statement. The Gemara talks about somebody who's spinning hair, who's spinning the tzemer that happens to still be on a behema. And the Gemara suggests that he should be chayiv three chatos, that's the first view. Gozes, Menapetz, and Tova. And Rav Kahana says, and we pass them like this, Ein derech Kaziza Bekaf, Ein derech Menapetz Bekaf, Ein derech Tivui Bekaf. That none of these are considered to be Kederech. So then the Gemara says, well, what about in the Mishkan? They did that in the Mishkan, so you should be chayiv for that, because that's what they did there. So very surprising. So the Gemara says, Chachmi Yaseir Rishani. And Chachmi Yaseir that was present in the Mishkan is not normal, it's not definitive here. So that's very hard to understand, because we learn everything out from the Mishkan, and here the Gemara is saying, well, that doesn't count, that's the way he did it in the Mishkan, that was special. So I'm in Manavshah. Either we should learn it from the Mishkan and it should match, or we don't learn it out from the Mishkan. So what exactly is going on there? So this was one of the Kavi Tekashesis. If you recall, we talked about the Chalkes Yoav's 103 toughest questions in the world. So this was one of them. He said he doesn't understand how this could be. But the way he phrases it, because he says that it's a chisar and lishma, that if the Mishkan had to be done lishma, and Malachas Machshavas means lishma, so, which he's taking for granted, it's just interesting that it's the same assumption that the Kashuk lover has, apparently it's from the Beis Medrash of the Eglei Tal, that if that's the case, so if this is not considered to be Malachas Machshavas, because you're pater for it on Shabbos, so then how is it lishma? How is the Mishkan done lishma? He doesn't understand this. So that was a question, he says, this is one of the hardest questions ever, and he left that open. it's important to note that in this Chachmei Yisrael example, so we see that Tosfos raised the issue that even if you'd have somebody nowadays who knows how to do this, he says you'd still be Pater because but Ladaito, which is very striking usage of the term but Ladaito. But Ladaito, we have it in other contexts. If somebody does something weird, so sometimes if something is not Kedera, so we Pater it. And then we find that even if one person wants to do it that way, but most of the world wouldn't do it that way, we still might say, but Ladaito, we don't acknowledge his unusual way of doing things. But here, it's different. As Jonathan pointed out at the time, it's hard to call this kalachayad, so to speak, because you're not doing it in a clumsy way, you're doing it in a fancier way. You're doing it in an even more skilled way, so it's an unusual type of tour. So to say, but Ladaito, if there's one person who's capable of doing it that way, so that doesn't make him weird, it makes him talented, and everyone would do it that way if they knew how to. So it's hard to say, but Ladaito, so that's a surprising tosis. So we talked about that a little bit, and there were a couple of answers. We didn't really scrape the surface of it, but we mentioned that in the Mandelbaum edition of the Kavod HaKashrei, so he has many, many pages that he collected from different svarim addressing this question of how do we make all of this match. And it's just interesting in light of this whole discussion of Halachas Machshavos. I think we did note that Mimonavshach, we have to say there was somewhat of a complicated relationship to the Mishkan because we learned the Halachas from the Mishkan, but at the same time there's some lack of connection because, let's say, for example, to use Choresh. So if we were be Choresh in a desert today, we'd be Pater because you can't plant anything in the desert. So what's the story if we look to the Mishkan? The Mishkan was made in the desert. So we mentioned there are two basic approaches as to how that worked. Either that, like Tosfos says in Chulin, that the desert bloomed, that they miraculously were able to get the desert to provide vegetation. Or, in Chanami, they didn't have to do it in the desert because everything was provided for them. But we look at the Malachos, not even so much as what they did in the Mishkan, but what they would have to do if they were building a Mishkan al pi derech hateva. So that means that either way, whichever example you take, that there is some miraculous component to the Mishkan, either that it was totally a miracle or that the miracles helped along the natural processes. So Mamela, there's always going to be a little bit of a difference between the way Malachas were done in the Mishkan and the way they're done today. So in the Mishkan, they were somehow getting their Harisha results from the desert, and today if you would do Harish in the desert, so you'd be Pater. So too, apparently the Chachmei Seira worked for them, but if you would do it today, again, you would be Pater. We also mentioned that there was one of the explanations in the Kavod HaKashrei there that said totally different than what Rashi says. Rashi assumes that the Chachmei Seira is talking about the Chachmas Halev of the women who were involved in the Mishkan. The Torah talks about Chachmas Halev at length. We talked about that great length once in the Parsha Shir. So that's what the Gemara means when it says Chachmei Yisrael, according to Rashi. Rashi puts the words Chachmas Halev and Kalachar Yad into the Gemara. Those are two words that are important for how you interpret this, but neither of them are in the Gemara itself. So as we saw, Kalachar Yad, you can maybe quibble if that's the right word or not, but also Chachmei Yisrael probably means Chachmas Halev. But we mentioned at the time there was also an approach that said that Chachmei Yisrael was actually talking about the animals, that the animals had greater wisdom, and therefore the normal animal, if you're going to try to do these malachos on the hair that's still on the animal's going to kick and scream and make it impossible. But because of the Chachmei Yisrael of the animals then, so they cooperated, that made it work, and that's a situation which you wouldn't have today. Okay, could be.
So someone left out to eat a fish?
Yeah. Essentially. So that basically took up most of our Chazar time. So we'll have to figure out. So I think the next one will be on Monday. Sunday and Tuesday have different cheer schedules, so it's harder to squeeze it into the morning. We'll Chazar on Monday and Wednesday, and we'll assess on Monday if we cover enough that we have to try to squeeze in a little bit more. But okay, so I plan that we'll meet back here at 1 o'clock today for Parsha Shir, and then on Sunday, God willing, another Malacha Marathon. There are a few more of the shorter Malachas that are coming up, so maybe we'll get a few done. Like yesterday, those of you with us, we did three Malachas, so the Malachas that are next on the list are also susceptible to being addressed quickly, so maybe on Sunday we'll get a decent chunk of Lachis finished.
Tova, which one's Tova
and Mesa? Those kinds, right.
Those that should be right over here.
Right, so maybe we'll get up, we'll see.
I'll try to find a video maybe over Shabbos.
Okay.
Not all Shabbos.
So I don't want to overpromise and say how many we'll get done on Sunday, but there's a chance we'll get a decent amount.
Yeah.
A decent amount done on Sunday. How are you?
Good, good.
Baruch Hashem. All righty. Yes, thank you.
Probably won't need to do the parts here either, I guess.
Exactly.